Steve McCabe. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim. How are you?
The English can understand the Scots, though, can't they?
I was looking for the subtitles.
You were not.
There were a couple of English words in there, I think, but no. Nah.
Fuh.
Not really.
You were determinedly not understanding it, I know. Richard Langston, you had no trouble following that at all, did you?
No, I was just listening to the music of it, you know. Just beautiful language.
I know, he does it well, doesn't he?
I enjoyed that so much. I saw Haggis being made in Dunedin. I filmed a story once. It was quite a pungent experience, and a lot of offal and innards and odd bits went in, as I remember.
Yes, well, you can get a much more seemly, as I said to John, sausage-like Haggis these days that everybody isn't afraid to sample, so I guess that's moving with the times. Steve McCabe, Richard in a moment. Steve McCabe, Chris Wikaita. I don't think we've got Chris yet on the panel after 4 o'clock, and we'll analyse the PM's State of the Nation speech. And in particular, well, the tools for apprentices, we'll mention that, but in particular, the steps towards affordable housing. And we'll talk about the $10,000 compensation for distress case from the Employment Relations Authority. That's an interesting case when this chap falsified his qualifications and the references weren't quite accurate. But anyway, we'll discuss it. Blankets or duvets, what do you use? The duvet is dominating, but the blanket supporters are fighting a rearguard action. And should racism, because we were talking about Django Unchained with Sarah McMullen, should racism and faulty towers be expunged? And this is the BBC's censoring of the Don't Mention the War famous Faulty Towers episode. And we'll talk about the fate of Jimbo, the American Staffordshire. The court has finally ruled that Jimbo is going to be put down. 4:10, Richard Langston talking about what the world's talking about.
Yes, and if we who eat our lunch at our computers should feel very ticked off today by no one less than the British Health Minister. Anna Sobry has said workers should not eat lunch at their computers. They should enjoy their food, and the habit of eating at your lunch is eating at your desk is disgusting.
All very well for her to say that. I mean, she probably doesn't have to eat at her desk, but there are many people in the real world who haven't got much choice.
Well, further down the story, actually, the Daily Telegraph seems to have found out that she does, in fact, eat her lunch in her office.
So, at her desk?
Yes.
In a disgusting manner?
Yeah. So it's peculiar. I mean, more than 60% of workers eat their lunch at their desk every day. And they admit they feel they just don't have the time to leave the office and spend time outside eating, so they stay at their desk, as many of us do.
Well, you wouldn't do it by choice. You know, you'd have to be a real loner to choose to sit at your desk and eat. So they're all doing it because they've got no choice, presumably.
Well, that's the nature of the workplace. And one young PR assistant, 24-year-old from Birmingham, is quoted as saying she hasn't taken a lunch break for 2 years. She doesn't take a lunch break because she thinks that's it'll hurt her career.
It'll hurt her career if the bosses see the desk empty.
Yes, if she's not there.
Would they think better of you, Steve McCabe, if you stayed in the classroom and had your lunch at the top table?
I don't really know. I mean, I could be seen to be working things. I teach in a science lab. It's technically against the rules. I'm actually not allowed to.
That's one advantage of being a scientist.
Absolutely,
yeah. You can't have your lunch.
Right there in Ministry of Education rules. Food and drink may not be permitted to be consumed in a science lab, so I have to go and eat in the staff room.
Ah, very good.
She's a pretty outspoken woman, this health minister, isn't she? Because in this Daily Mail story, she's also quoted as saying that the British have become a weird nation when it comes to food. They watch endless programs of people cooking and then they don't cook themselves.
But have you seen what the Scottish eat? I think we just dealt with that one.
I have. I've seen it in all its glory, Steve.
Haggis sandwich. Haggis sandwich for lunch.
Yes, deep fried, presumably.
I think there'd be a bit of a kerfuffle if you ate haggis at your desk, wouldn't there? There'd be something and had a wee dram to push it down to inspire you on into the afternoon.
That's the sort of job you're after, actually, isn't it, Richard?
Well, I was musing on it, Jim.
Well, of course, the wee dram could be a science project. We do have distillation equipment in the lab.
Well done. Yes. Now, this business of the American football players.
Yes, well, here we go. The Los Angeles Times reports that doctors have discovered a way of finding out if professional footballers' brains might be damaged before it's too late. They use a chemical marker, UCLA scientists, which shows up a protein which is present in when people have got Alzheimer's or other cognitive impairments. So, and they use a PET scan as well, and this has become a big subject because of the bloke who not so long ago, who was a former footballer and was suffering from depression because of brain impairment, who killed himself.
But the irony is, of course, they put on the helmets to give themselves protection, and in fact, if they took off the helmets, they'd be better off.
Well, but then...
They'd have to adapt their play. I mean, they couldn't go and bash each other in the head anymore.
It's the boxing gloves versus bare knuckles argument, isn't it? The idea is that you actually end up punching harder and doing more damage when you're wearing boxing gloves.
Rather than just bare hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, these guys are not being chosen for their intellectual gifts.
No, but they don't want to be incapacitated later in life, do they?
Yeah, because they might not be able to, I don't know, tell if their girlfriend's real or not, for example.
What a cynic!
But speaking of that story, I haven't had a chance to listen to those conversations between the Samoan American football player and his girlfriend, who turns out to have been a bloke, and the fake conversations to assess how real they
sounded. Released them.
They have. They're online. You can listen to them.
So they were recording this all along.
Well, they've managed to obtain three of these conversations, so you can go online and decide for yourself whether you think they're real.
Oh, fantastic.
And people who haven't heard about the story will wonder what we're talking about, but it's too complicated to explain.
Yes, it is.
I mean, if they did away with the helmets, Jim, it would change the whole nature of the game, wouldn't it?
That's a good point, Richard.
But one of the players who has been part of this study, who's Wayne Clark, a former quarterback who played for five seasons, he hopes that these diagnoses may lead to a rethink about exactly the equipment used and the rules. So there's clearly some kind of movement that this game is destructive.
Yes, they've clearly found out, haven't they, that men, after they stop playing American football at a top level, tend more to depression and have more cognitive loss than other men of the same age and weight and, you know, education and stature and so on. That's fairly clear, I think.
And they've always seemed to have... I was trying to think, did they introduce the helmets at some point? But it seems to be they've always had them. I think I remember one of the early famous gridiron players was a guy called Jim Thorpe, who was an Indian, as I remember, and I think he had a leather helmet on. So I think that it's been there since the start of the game. So clearly it's so woven in with the folklore, with everything about the game, that it would take a major thing to make them change.
Richard Langston, Chris Weikart has just arrived. He'll be in a minute. Steve McCabe and Chris are on the panel after 4 o'clock. We talked about the bulletproof backpacks, which was such a sad idea out of the United States, Richard. That's been taken a bit further.
It has. Well, the latest development out of the shooting is a business's hope, which is hoping to prevent obviously more shootings, has reinvented the ordinary classroom whiteboard and turned it into a bulletproof shield, if you can believe it.
How does that work?
Well, it's made of it's made of some obviously hard. It's a military hardware company that's made it, Hardwire, based in Maryland. And this is made of such a solid substance, it's bulletproof from point blank, basically. And it's sizable, 18 by 20 inches, 46 by 51 centimetres. It's got three rubber handles on the back of it, and the teacher puts his or her arm through it to protect herself or himself. You know, it sounds awful, doesn't it?
No, it's bizarre. Chris Weikart, kia ora, Chris, good afternoon.
Jim, Steve, how are you?
Good to see you.
So the full compliments are in place. It is bizarre that what they're doing, the initiatives they're doing in America to try and make the classrooms safe.
Well, in particular, keeping the teacher safe, which is obviously the priority here. This is good.
Well, the teacher. But how would it work? So the teacher picks up the whiteboard using the handles at the back, the straps at the back, and advances towards the gunman and says, you know, and presumably tries
to put down that gun, or I'm sending to the principal's office.
Yes, presumably that'd be about all he could do then.
So, now when any school looks to hire a teacher, they're going to see if you've got any record that you've worked for a SWAT team or something. I mean, it's a little absurd. I thought cause might be the thing they might try and fix rather than result.
But these are being gratefully received. They're being handed out, aren't they, Richard? And schools are saying, yes, please, we'll take those. Bulletproof whiteboards, excellent.
Well, they fit in with the political climate, which is, if you don't want to surrender your guns, we will provide you with things to protect you against guns. There's also another company, Jim, has developed a handheld bulletproof clipboard. I mean, it's not funny, is it? It's just crazy. It's crazy than crazy.
How does that work? You hold up the clipboard and your assailant shoots directly at it.
I don't know. You look sort
obligingly.
Of... obligingly. Yes.
Well, you use it a bit like a lightsaber, you know, deflecting bullets and rays and laser beams.
Yeah, that would work, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Your reflexes may still be that good, Chris Wicata. I don't think...
No.
I mean, frankly, just take a few students and hold them in front of you, surely.
Hush, Steve McCabe.
Sorry.
It is all a bit sad.
One of the problems with bulletproof whiteboards is I'm on the board of Island Bay School in Wellington, and our principal was telling us at the last meeting before Christmas that whiteboards, you know, probably a thing of the past, these new interactive desktop type tablet-y screeny things are the way of the future. So there'd be no more whiteboards to be bulletproof or otherwise.
And they're expensive. You wouldn't want to get them shot up.
And who exactly uses a clipboard these days is another question.
True. And there's a whole generation who ask, what's a blackboard, when you raise that one?
Yes.
Richard Langston with What the World's Talking About. Well, we're talking about the weather, aren't we, Richard?
We are.
The lovely good weather we've got on the way.
Yes, so it's been causing a lot of disbelief and mirth that the Wellington weather has made headlines because there's going to be 10 days of uninterrupted blue sunshine.
Yes.
And this is extraordinary. This is causing Wellingtonians to scratch their eyes and
it's
disbelief.
Only happening because I'm here in Auckland.
Yeah, possibly, Chris.
You did have Christmas Day as well.
Don't take it personally, Chris, but it is going to be lovely. But
cosmically?
Cosmically, on a wider scale of looking at the weather and our place in the scheme of the cosmos and all that stuff, the universe is cooling down.
Yeah.
And we know this now because clever boffin scientists in Australia have used the National Telescope there to take the temperature of a galaxy 7.2 billion light years away.
Quite close.
And the temperature there was...
minus what?
Minus 267.92 degrees Celsius.
Oh, that is quite cold.
Cold.
So they've... although we don't have time to ascertain it completely through this discussion, things are cooling down cosmically.